It's good.
That's it.
Every episode, the little woo amuses Todd and I no end.
Yeah.
And it just sets us in the mood. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Aussie Crafter Still Is Shooting the Shit. I'm Luke. That's Todd. Crafty is on the other side of the world.
Hello, everyone.
He's here in spirit. And tonight we are chatting with a couple of interesting people doing some interesting things at Zymus. We've got Carla and Cameron. Guys, hi, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
No worries. We'll get into who you are and what Zymus does, but first we need to start off, as we always do, with what's in your glass. We'll start with Crafty. Do you have anything handy, given that it's 9 a.m.
Is that water?
Is that vodka?
It is nay vodka. It is 100% Irish water, I believe.
There you go.
Yeah, from Tipperary. There we are.
Right. Okay. 2024 vintage, I'm assuming.
So splurging up big time.
Yeah.
Cost cutting, guys. Cost cutting.
Cam and Carla, what's in your glass?
We are drinking Wavy.
Good old Wavy.
Wavy.
Mandarin.
Very, very, now, very tasty and refreshing.
Coincidentally, and through amazing happenstance, we're drinking that as well. Nice. So I've got the Wavy Blood Orange and Mandarin.
And mine's Blackcurrant.
Blackcurrant. But we have been given very, very generously by
two other ones.
By the watermelon. Guys, and of course Wavy. We've got the watermelon, and we also have the mango. Hard seltzers. And we've also got these really wicked stubby holders. They're great.
They're good. They literally
color. It changes color. That blew my mind when I saw it.
It is so cool. They're actually 3D printed as well. So
yeah,
it was actually a 3D printed on a machine. So that's even cooler. Mm. They Wavy guys came in and dropped them off to us. Shout out to Chris and Kim. They were literally fresh off the 3D printer. So wow. Nobody's actually seen those yet, which is very cool.
There you go. Well, we've got them and they are really, really cool. Yeah. Crafty, you miss out.
Luke, I think you just disclosed a secret there. I don't think they'd released it yet. So they have now.
They have now. To all of our millions of followers and subscribers, I think they're now going to be inundated. So we're drinking.
That's 30 minutes per can.
Yeah. So we're drinking Wavy, but we're talking to Zymus. How, yes. What, and why? Who are you?
So I guess I'll give you a bit of background quickly around how Zymus came about. So it's a family business. It started in New Zealand. My granddad actually started a business called Citrus Services, which ultimately was importing orange juice from Europe. And sadly, after 2 years of running that business, he unfortunately passed away. And then my mum took over the business, Maria Dagger, who's the managing director. And she ran Citrus Services and also created another business called Enzyme Services. And they worked alongside each other, servicing orange juice and different other business sorts of interests there, and also enzymes to New Zealand and Australia. And then in the 2000s, the two businesses were too big to run side by side in one building. So we merged them together to be Zymus, which is the Zyme from enzyme and the Mist from citrus.
Quite literal blending.
That's it.
So we've been set up in New Zealand since 1984 and in Australia since 2010. So we've been around for a little while.
41 years this year, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, 41 years.
Yeah. So ultimately, Zymus is a formulators in the beverage and beverage and food industries, and we also a flavor house, enzyme supplier, manufacturer, you name it, we do it.
Right. And okay, so flavors, enzymes, colors,
compounds
yeah, for use within within beverages, within, so obviously we've got our hot seltzers that we're drinking at the moment. As I said, I've got the blood orange and mandarin, which actually does taste like those things, surprisingly. Normally when things are flavored, I think it's going to be sickly sweet and a little bit off-putting, but that's actually it's real. Is it real?
It is real, yeah. So some of these flavors are they're extracts as well. We've got obviously, so in our portfolio, we've got over 10,000 different flavors, extracts, colors, enzymes, auxiliaries, ingredients. So it's quite a big offering. And yeah, so we're really good. We've got some really good citrus profiles. They've actually got real elements of blood orange and real elements of mandarin in there as well. So when we go through the flavor creation, we extract some of the oils, and then obviously that goes through a whole big process, and then gets spit out as a natural flavor, which is what we're drinking today.
Yeah. So you've got so clients such as Wavy will come to you with an idea of, we want to do a seltzer in these flavors, and then how does that all come about? How does the process work? Can you explain a little bit about what that is?
Sure. So we can pretty much bring anything to life. So we go from a concept to commercialized formulation. So in the distilling industry is probably a good one to refer to. So we're seeing a lot of distillers, distilleries, I should say, coming to us looking for different, I guess, offerings within their business. So looking at, instead of just being, hey, here's a 700 ml of rum or vodka or gin, how about we put this into a ready-to-drink format? So put it into a can and, you know, enhance it with some flavors and create basically a product that a consumer can go in and purchase a four-pack or a six-pack or a case and enjoy at home rather than having to mix it all themselves. So it is quite a interesting it's very interesting sort of seeing what's changing and what's happening in the market as obviously excise, you know, increases, which is obviously a very big talking point at the moment. So, you know, diversifying sort of just away from your natural, you know, your offerings of your 700 ml bottles of spirits and, you know, going with those smaller pack formats. And, you know, every consumer can sort of, you know, purchase these products, which is really exciting. So it really showcases the distillery's offerings and sort of showcases their products as well in a ready-to-drink format.
Yeah, right. So when it comes to a distillery, and we've got to, just so everyone's aware, we've got to obviously trade carefully because the majority of your clientele don't actually like you publicizing that you work with them, and we can understand those commercial and confidence restrictions there. And thank you to the way guys for being open about it and letting us to see these as samples. So when you're working with a distillery to create an RTD, say, I mean, the most common thing that you would have from a whiskey distillery would be a whiskey and Coke. So how do you work with that distillery to create that, an RTD that is a whiskey and Coke without it being Coke?
We can go through the process of step by step. Yeah. So like we would get a brief from a customer, and if it's a whiskey and Coke, we would get their base if they have a base. Otherwise, we would be able to supply the base, a whiskey base, and then we would find out what kind of cola profile they like. Do they like true to the Coca-Cola? Do they like Pepsi? Do they like there's heaps of different cola kind of ranges or flavors that we've got in our portfolio. So it's kind of like narrowing down the flavor that they like, and we might present to them four or five different options, and it's like sugar levels, acids, and, you know, percentage if they want to be able to taste the alcohol, or do they want it hidden so it's really easy to drink and not mm-hmm. the burn, the alcohol burn? So there's heaps of different questions that we have. Mm. And then once we've got all those questions, we brief it into our team in New Zealand where our labs are, and they'll do all the formulating and all that, and then they'll send it back to us, and then we'll present it to the customer, and they'll provide out the feedback live, and we can get all the information, then we'll brief it back and we'll do tweaks. So it kind of goes back and forth until we all land on something that we're happy with.
Yeah, right. And what is the typical sort of time frame for from conception to just testing? Are we looking at how long does it take to create your typical flavor? Or typical profile, I should say.
Yeah, look, I think there's it all varies really. I mean, you've got lots of obviously different, everyone's palates are different. So, you might present something through and you might get it the first shot. So, you know, you might be done in 2 weeks and, you know, you've got a commercialized formulation. Sometimes you can go backwards and forwards 2 or 3 times. You know, for big projects, we also offer, we'll do workshops here in Sydney and Marrickville. So we'll actually have a technologist that will come over. We've got a lab built downstairs, so we'll go through the process with them as well, their marketing team, and we'll sort of streamline 6 or 12 months worth of pipeline in one go, which is really exciting. So you can sort of get all that signed off within generally a week, which is a lot of the bigger brands that we work with like to do. Don't get me wrong, there are some brands that, you know, do like to go through the process and, you know, send samples so they can do tasting panels with their teams and their marketing teams and the hierarchy, I guess. But look, it's depends on how the overall the brand that we're working with, how they sort of want to operate. But look, I guess in short, probably looking at from a concept to a commercialized formulation, anywhere from sort of 4 to 6 weeks. And then from there, that's going through finished product tastings. And looking at, you know, we actually, when we do the tastings of the clients, we actually put them in, so they actually have to taste the finished product in 250 ml bottles. So it's not just a here's a flavor, dose it yourself. We actually construct the whole product and put that into a, you know, a sealed bottle. We generally give 2 or 3 bottles at a time of each version. So there might be, you know, a rum and cola, a bourbon and cola. There might be a whiskey and cola. You know, you've got all different types of profiles. And so we might say, well, here's 3 different colas. Here's 3 different whiskey sodas. Here's 3 different, pineapple rum. You know what I mean? And so we can go through the processes and they might say, well, look, we like these versions. We're happy to sign these off. We want these a little bit sweeter. And generally, you know, you go through that process. And then from there, you know, once the commercialized formulation's done, we go through the next process of, you know, determining a contract manufacturer, generally who the brand will be currently working with or who they nominate. And then from there, we go through the procurement of ingredients, so the flavors that we've used and what Zymus would supply. And then obviously the contract manufacturer would obviously supply, you know, dry goods, packaging, which we don't do. But we can do non-committal nutritional panels. We can do,
liquid for testing.
Yeah, liquid for testing, quality, corrosivity. And we go through the whole process. So it's sort of from start to finish.
Sounds very intensive.
Yeah, we also offer like little 30 mil samples where if a customer wants to do their own bench testing or do their own tweaks or create their own product on their own base, which they can. So we offer that as well. So it's not just we have to do it ourselves. Like we'll provide them the flavors as well if they want to do it themselves.
So does it mean that are there issues with volume? I would imagine that like that process that you're describing could be quite labor intensive and time intensive for you and for the client. Does that sort of preclude smaller players from using the services or?
No, not at all. So when we go through the stages, we've got our minimum water quantities. We've actually got a really cool range called our Diver Dan range, which is basically we look at all the mainstream flavors and we can do smaller offering pack sizes. So we can do, you know, the 5-10 kilo sort of pack sizes opposed to the, you know, the 20, 40 and 60 that, you know, some of our other competitors would offer, making it a bit more feasible, for the smaller players, you know, people that are sort of starting out. But going through the process, we outlay, I guess, you know, we go through the process of, you know, this is what the minimum order quantities are looking like for these types of flavors, you know, because obviously we've got sort of your mainstream flavors, got our really premium flavors, which may have the higher minimum order quantities. You know, you look at your emulsions, which again might have the higher quantities, because for us to yield, you know, the amount of product that needs to go through to yield, say, 20 kilos is, you know, it's quite significant. So, you know, we look at all these different options. But look, when we're choosing flavors and when we're developing flavors for these smaller, you know, startup businesses and brands, you know, we try to be as open and, I guess, forthcoming as possible. And, you know, creating products that, you know, it's not just something that I guess is, you know, sort of mainstream market, it's more unique to their brand, which I guess, again, it does make a bit more, I guess, a bit more of a special offering opposed to a, you know, just a, just your sort of mainstream profiles.
And they generally have a year shelf life as well. So it's not going to just expire in 2-3 months. Like, it's got a good shelf life on them.
Right. Okay. So you say you only want to do a certain amount now, you can left over, you can do another run later on in the year and
Exactly.
that product. Right. Okay, interesting. So how do you actually create a flavor or get the essence of a flavor out of it? Is it almost like a distillation process that you're doing, or I guess it depends on the flavor itself as to what process you would use.
It depends on what it is. So you've got different flavor types. So you've got synthetic flavors, which are generally, we can sort of make them taste like anything. So if you want say passion root with seed with a hint of pineapple and something else in it in one flavor, that's generally what sort of what you look at for a synthetic flavor. They're quite robust. Back of a packaging, they'll be declared as flavor opposed to natural flavoring. Right. Then you've got a natural flavor. So natural flavors are natural flavor compounds. That are derived from natural, I guess, products. And then from there, you sort of construct, you know, building blocks to create various profiles and carriers. So you got, you know, propylene glycol, you've got ethanol, probably the two main carriers. Triacetin, which is probably, that's probably more bakery side of things. But like you've got, propylene glycol, ethanol. So you've got different carriers that you sort of play on. Citrus generally will fall on an ethanol carrier because of the oil, so the separation, opposed to propylene glycol. Whereas propylene glycol, you're sort of looking at your more of your tropical fruits, like you generally everything else other than citrus. And then you look at extracts. So extracts are extracted from the name fruit. So you look at, so you got a lime extract. So that would actually go through a proper distillation process. You know, it goes into chambers. Look, it goes through different washes, different elements, depending on the type of profile that you're trying to extract from that product. So if you're doing a lime oil, if you want like the, say, the lime center, you want some lime skin, you want, you know, lemon peel, for example, different processes for the extraction process. And then from there, again, most extracts are put on ethanol carriers just because of the way that the extraction process is, and there's a lot of oils. And then, that's pretty much the sort of the three main profiles.
And then I guess some people like to have synthetic because there's the dose rate's not too high. If they're not going after that natural claim, the synthetic dose rate in terms of flavor usage is quite low compared to a natural flavor where the profile doesn't come across as strong. So you've got to dose it higher.
Gotcha.
So that's also comes up.
Synthetic's probably more concentrated, I guess, if you sort of go down that route. If you're happy to use just a general flavor, like a synthetic flavor, they're pretty bulletproof. They can't, over time, they don't fade. You can sort of put them in anything. They can withstand, most of them can withstand, you know, if they've got a little bit of heat or...
Same as colors.
Same as colors as well.
So do you guys actually have the recipe for Coca-Cola?
We wish. We wish. There's only actually, I was reading something the other day, there's only 3 people in the world that know the recipe. And
deep diving on Reddit to try
because there's all the copycat colas that are never quite there, are they?
There's like a lemon in it. There's like a lemon flavor in it. So we're trying to do like our Coke flavors, our cola flavors with a bit of lemon, with a bit of lime, but we haven't quite. We've come pretty close. We're pretty happy with our proactors that we've done for like vodka, Coke, and just soft drink colas, but not quite nailed it.
We're pretty close. We've got a pretty good Pepsi match. We have got a pretty good Coca-Cola match. Yeah, good Sprite match. We've got a good Fanta match. If you sort of wanted to go down those routes, we've got American cola. We can do all different types of, additives into your base sort of products as well, just to, enhance some other notes too. So if you want like a honey in there, like a bourbon honey or a whiskey honey, we've got some amazing honey profiles. But yeah, we've got all different types of sort of products that you can add into these various applications and create some pretty cool things.
Okay. So say
how do you train for this to blend flavor? Is it a scientific background?
Yeah, it's food technology.
I was going to say they got like flat. So you got flavors. So flavors are very sought after in the industry. So they'll basically go through and analyze different key elements of different flavors, and they'll actually build the flavor profiles. So most flavors have been in the industry they'll start as a technologist and they'll sort of work their way up to a flavorist. So they've probably had, 20, 30 years in the industry. There's some incredibly amazing flavorists out there that can match.
They can just taste something and know exactly what to put in it. With all our different flavors, they can just pinpoint exactly what goes in it. It's quite amazing.
And then and then you've got super tasters as well. So super taste is another cool thing. So there's actually a test that you can do. So we do a lot of triangle testing. So there's a triangle test that you can do. And if you can analyze the difference between the flavors, it's actually a well-known test to actually say that you're a super taster. And there's not a lot of them in the world. We're lucky. We've actually got two in our team. So we're very, very lucky in that element.
So one of the actual tests is that you put this piece of paper on your tongue. And if that provides, I think it's a metallic or an actual note on your tongue, then you're a super taster. That was one of the tests that you can do. So normally no one can taste anything. It just tastes like kind of like a dissolvable piece of paper thing on your tongue. But a wafer kind of thing. But if it provides a flavor.
So is that part of your hiring process? Here, just put that on your tongue and tell me what you think.
It should be.
It should be 100%.
Leads into a nice question coming from a regular Ian. Hi, Uncle. Good evening. Is the blending done more by craft? So analog, obviously with your super tasters and people who can just taste it and know what goes in, or is there instrumentation that you use or can use to create the blend as well?
Formulating the concept.
Yeah. So if you're referring to formulating, so
first of all, thank you for your question.
Yeah. Thanks for your question. That's awesome. Look, there's different ways that we can formulate. So you can do instrument. So you can actually run flavors. So if you're trying to match a flavor from somewhere else around the world, or you've got a product that you sort of wanted to match, you can actually put it through a machine, and it will give you sort of a read around what the different compounds are that are in that particular makeup. So say if you've got the actual base flavor from, somewhere else in the world, you can sort of get an idea. Doing a pretty good match from that way. Analog, obviously we do a lot by taste. From a tasting perspective, when the team are formulating, they'll go through various taste processes. So they might do 10 or 20 different bench variations before the actual first version of formulation goes in as well. But if you're talking around blending, when you're going through the mixing stage, look, that's generally done. You've got obviously your flavors. So the flavors will come in, say, like a 10 kg pack. So if you're following like a formulation, and then that's just measured out. So there might be, say 1 to 2 mils of flavor and per liter. Mm-hmm. So you scale it up to, how many liters you're sort of making. Various ingredient will have a dose rate, from
like
the
recipe.
A recipe from the commercialized formulation. And then obviously the digital side of things as well, you can sort of look at your pH, your bricks, and your SGs and stuff, which we obviously provide doing the formulation process too. Hopefully that answers your question.
Do you ever see variants when you I know we see it when people take their small scale gin recipe and they've got their botanicals just right and then try and scale it up to do volume and it all falls apart. Sure. Something is more dominant when you just add all of it in. How do you combat variance at scale?
Yeah, look, I mean, so we formulate to a litre. So we can basically scale that from anywhere upwards of, you know, you can go a million litres. So it's all done by weight and scale. So from a distillation process, so generally a lot of the breads, so if you're building an RTD, so you already have done your base whiskey or your base gin, like that'll be your basically your, I guess your base spirit that you'll be using, which what Carla was mentioning before, when we actually get samples of your base spirit, you know, it might be 40%, it might be 50% proof, whatever that is. And then, you know, say if you're doing a 5% product, you know, we'll obviously analyze all of the, you know, the ethanol components that are actually coming from the flavors itself, and we'll formulate to a 5% spec. So, you know, it might be XYZ amount of your actual, I guess, your gin or your whiskey. And then obviously your different variations of your acids. So you might have a citric acid, you might have a sodium citrate, you might have malic acid in there just to enhance the flavors and sort of make them pop a little bit more. You might have an element of sugar, you know, if you're doing like a full sugar product or you're doing a low sugar product, which might then be built up with, you know, various levels of different sweeteners. And then you've obviously got your preservatives, you know, whether that be potassium sorbate, sodium benzoate are probably the two main preservatives that are used throughout the industry. And then when you're going through sort of the, some of the bigger plants as well, they've got Valcorin, so DMDC, which I guess acts as a sterilant. So they're sort of bulletproof, the formulations. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, we make them as straightforward as possible. So, you know, I guess anyone with experience that knows how to blend obviously can go through the blending process. And we also supply, depending on, I guess, your process as well, sort of like what your manufacturing capabilities are, we can look at various processing steps in order to create that product too. So it all comes down to, I mean, it's a fine art. I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's just being, I guess, diligent and sort of how you're measuring, you know, making sure that your weights and everything are on point, you know, for a lot of your ingredients that you're using. And from there, I mean, what you've tasted through the, obviously the sampling process from us, from the concept to commercialized formulation, that then obviously will, I just transcribe into your finished product of what you're going to run through the line, which will, what I guess at the end of the day is what you're going to get through the can when you crack your fresh can open. So,
but even when we're formulating the bent just in the lab and stuff, we would always formulate and let it sit for 24 hours because that flavor evolves and it won't be as what it tasted like when you first made it to the next day. So you have to let your flavor sit and see how it develops the next day or even a little bit longer just to see how it matures and settles out. That flavor will always change.
It's amazing. It's like the distiller, you know, you go through the distilling process and I mean you sort of, you know, you're looking at all your different I mean if you're doing a gin, you know, different levels of juniper, I mean what that ends up, you know, coming out the other side. I mean it's amazing how small different changes happen overnight. It's crazy. Now we find that a lot of as Carl was saying, like a lot of RTDs, they sort of they go through the process, they'll, you know, they'll basically, I guess, disperse throughout the liquid and you get a whole complete, I guess, change drink in some aspect for the better, which is, it's quite cool how the flavors sort of, I guess, react with all the acids and different profiles and sugars and everything else and the alcohol components inside the bottles.
Now, this is an interesting question coming again from Ian. Do you come across people who are snobby towards blends? Now, I'd probably tweak that a little as to whether it's synthetic or a natural flavoring. Are there, from an industry perspective, what are you seeing people gravitate more to?
Carla's probably can answer this one, but I mean, a lot of people, natural flavors, you find, like a lot of...
I'm not sure if your question is that to do with, could be cheating with in terms of like we're providing the flavor, and so it's not so
from a distilling perspective, there's always an element of it's a blend, it's not the best thing, it's not
as good a quality if it's a
I guess we're just kind of like helping your business evolve, and it doesn't really matter what other people think. It's like we're working with you and your cost effective ways to do things, and if we can help your business do something quicker and get provide the same outcome for less time and money, then
happy day. At the end of the day, I mean, when you look at formulating and you're creating these ready to drink products, you're looking at scalability. So, you know, you can go down the route of using, you know, doing your own extraction processes and, you know, using natural ingredients through your, you know, when you're distilling and everything else. But I mean, at the end of the day, it becomes costly. And you're not necessarily going to get the flavor profile that you're after as well. Whereas if you go through the process of creating something like an RTD using natural flavors, you know, the profile that we're supplying or like the flavor that we're supplying and what you've tasted, that is guaranteed exactly 100% of the time that's what you're going to get. So yeah, I mean, it sort of eliminates, I guess, you know, if there's any difference between, you know, blend one versus blend three, you know, a consumer might say, oh, this tastes complete. Yeah, reliability.
I guess a good example is the Australian Botanicals, because back in maybe 2014, we were sourcing different Australian Botanicals, and I reached out to another supplier just to talk about, you know, what's happening with your Australian Botanicals, where you're getting from. He was just getting them from a guy down the road in his backyard. He was growing botanicals. And I was like, oh, that's well and good, but what happens if someone uses those botanicals in a range and the demand really takes off? Like, what's happening with supply? And then he was like, oh, well, it doesn't matter. So in terms of our situation, like, you're guaranteed the supply is going to be there, and it's going to be consistent, and it's going to be micros are going to be fine. It's all going to be safe and fine.
It's a totally known quantity. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. And commercially viable as well. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's that's a big thing. I mean, we probably look at, you know, I guess probably a good example that happened, not recently, but a couple of years ago, raspberry juice concentrate, which was widely used, you know, for a lot of the, I guess, the raspberry stouts that were sort of going around. If you're looking at the brewing industry, I mean, raspberry climbed to over, you know, concentrates climbed over, you know, nearly $90 a kilo. Whereas, you know, and you're using a lot to get that profile. Whereas, you know, we say, well, right, you know, add a small, you still have a, you know, a small amount on there, but let's build this up with flavors and still create that profile that you're sort of wanting to achieve, more fresh and more vibrant, but your cost of goods, like, so your cost in use, you know, instead of being, I don't know, $2 a litre, it's now 80 cents a litre. So, like, it's more viable, but you're still using raspberries in there, but you're sort of balancing that out with, you know, a little bit of natural flavour. It really makes it more cost effective, which, you know, is a big talking point at the moment as well. You know, the cost to make is incredibly expensive now, you know, with dry goods, packaging, you know, you look at, as I said earlier, I mean, excise is a big thing on everyone's mind as well. So it's it just makes it more cost effective for you know, smaller distilleries or medium sized distilleries or anybody to have a product in market that they know, you know, is, I guess, going to be successful, and it's cost effective.
Are there any limitations in flavor? Are there things that just don't work?
There's always things that don't work.
A certain flavor that people come to you on a couple of times, and it's like, look, there's just no way to make that taste not shit.
You mean like banana and bacon, perhaps?
Oh, look, that sounds like a match made in heaven, really. Because looking at the website,
I mean,
you've got. Yeah. And as you said, you've got a metric shit ton of flavors here, all the way down to things like bacon, broth, chicken and fat, and the meat side of things.
That'd be interesting.
Hops, hibiscus. It would be very interesting. Yuzu. I mean, that's a very popular flavor at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Correct.
So are there any things that you've tried and it just hasn't really worked?
Look, I mean, the offerings that we have, I mean, that's the scary part, because our portfolio is so big. I mean, what you've seen on the website is just a glimpse of what we have really behind in our flavor vault. So, I mean, look, bacon, okay, we could do a bacon pancake profile. I mean,
there's Elon. Like flavors out there that if you did seasoning on a chip, you could bite into a chip and just, for example, a cheeseburger, you could taste a cheeseburger and be able to taste the oiliness of the cheeseburger and the cheese of the cheeseburger. Like it really gets really nitty gritty and you can really get those flavor profiles across. A Caesar salad, like another one, you can have even a flavor in a drink. You can get that Caesar salad right down to the definition of like the anchovies and the reds. Yeah, really detailed. And
it is, it's pretty amazing what you can do with flavors. And as I said, I mean, look, don't get me wrong, there are some things that are just, it would be impossible, you know what I mean? Like, say you want an element of, I don't know, you got a tie and you have those frogs on a stick or something like that, and you want to incorporate something like that, that's going to be a bit hard. But, I mean, look, from a, I guess, you know, the sort of products that are in market, I mean, everything that you see on the shelves in Woolworths, Coles, anywhere, you know, any major supermarket chain, they all have some element of some sort of flavour in there.
Yeah,
so I mean, if you sort of look at that from an aspect of what our offerings are, it probably give you a pretty good idea of what you can and can't do.
Wow. So with the, actually, that I've just seen a question come up again from Ian. So do people taste and have the mouthfeel of the cheeseburger? Even when tasting it.
So we've got mouthfeel. Have the mouthfeel. So especially in drinks, if you don't have sugar in there, you lose that mouthfeel. So we have ways of adding mouthfeel back in. So it's just another additive that you can add back in. And I think just going back to the question before about being snobby using flavors, there's a lot of work behind the scenes. So I think that it's kind of like discrediting yourself if you say, oh, you know, I just added flavors in there, because the work that you do with our team behind the scenes and that we're all doing is there's quite a bit of work to it. So there's no right or wrong way to do it if you're landing on a great drink that you like, you know.
I guess going back to the mouthfeel question as well, I mean, you've got you know, different gums, you've got sugars that you can add in, you've got gums, you've got different profiles, you know, you can play around with carbonation, you can play around with so many different elements to sort of create those profiles. I mean, look, in a beverage, I mean, it's never going to be like biting, you know, into a cheeseburger and sort of enhancing that sort of bread profile and everything else. But it's not like you're going to get out of McDonald's and get a cheeseburger and say, oh, this tastes like the drink that I just had the other day. But, you know, you're going to get the sensation and the palate. You know, I guess from that profiles of the different elements that are in there, like the cheese, the pickles, the meat, you know, if there's a meat flavor, the onions, garlic, the smoke flavors, there's, you know, so you're going to get the experience of what a cheeseburger will taste like. You know, you can add a bit of gum in there, so it's a little bit more of a mouthfeel.
Seasoning on chips. I'm not going to say that we can do a cheeseburger drink.
We've done many others.
You were going to get so many orders for that.
Cheeseburger
drink. Yeah, that's the next big thing, totally.
I got some pretty amazing McDonald's. Think of McDonald's pickle flavors. I got some pretty amazing flavors, which we've got as a pretty good offering as well. So. Right. There's some pretty good things. If somebody wants to do a pickled vodka, we can. That is definitely something we can do.
Curious. All right. So I can see, in terms of use cases, obviously our audience is very much distilling focused. Obviously the RTDs, specific products like, so your whiskey and coke, your vodka, your gins, your whatnot, your hard seltzers. What about things like mixers? So there's very, very few mixer or big mixer brands. Obviously there's Fevertree. Previously we had Longraise, who are a sponsor of ours, but we're trying to get in contact with them at the moment. So there could theoretically you come up with your own mixer
100%
product, so your own variation on a gin and tonic or a tonic, rather than being stuck with the Mediterranean flavor or a citrus flavor, you've got a Australian Outback flavor, whatever that may entail.
Outback steak tonic, there you go.
Yes, but 100% we can do stuff, ginger ales, tonics, soda, like flavored soda waters, anything like that.
Or your real sort of, I guess, bold and grungy sodas as well, like using, you know, real premium juice concentrates and premium sort of products. We can also do, as Carl was saying, like your dries. We can basically create anything.
We've actually done a proactive range for the Fever Tree. For example, we do proactives, which means that we go out to different customers, or we can, if someone inquires about stuff and we've got it already made up, we will send them the proactives to try. And so we've done a Fever Tree match proactive, which means it's like a take on an offering basically for a soda.
Siren, in short, so if a distillery comes to us and says, hey, you know, we've got a distillery, we're open to the public, you know, we've got, I guess, you know, we've got people coming in doing tastings, we're going to create our own mixer that we can sort of present and showcase our tonics that work, you know, our gins or complement our spirits. Can we create like a spicy cola with an element of some cinnamon and some cardamom or something like that, you know, which we're really, we know these sort of botanicals really bring out our different profiles in our rum, say, for example, or something like that, you know. We can sort of, we can construct those by all means. So that's, we're not limited just doing the RTDs where you sort of got to add in the ethanol component or, you know, your spirit. We can create products that, you know, you can put in a bottle and have displayed and sell, you know, for a four pack or a case, you know, to your consumers that are coming in, to your distillery to do your tastings. And, you know, it might be an offering, bundle offering where you say, oh, here's a, you know, buy this, have a four pack of this. And, you know, it's something that,
why sell someone else's product when you can sell your own?
Correct.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And when people are certainly looking always to support local and whatnot, I think it does open up additional revenue, potential revenue streams. Interesting question coming from Hamo. Where does it stand legally to disclose added flavors? How much disclosure do you need to put on your label?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, if you're talking about an RTD format, so generally you have an ingredients listing. If you're looking at which would display again, like sort of your general makeup. I mean, you're not going to disclose what sort of flavors you're using. It might just say natural flavors. It might just say, you know, your ingredient, typical ingredients listing might be carbonated water, natural flavors, acids, you know, sugar, preservative, depending on obviously the order of the weights. And sort of what comes high and what comes sort of what's the smallest dose, right? But look, if you're looking at spirits and stuff, you generally don't have to disclose flavors. Like, you don't actually have to do ingredients listings on spirits. So, you know, you could just say with various flavors. So you look at a lot of liqueurs, right? So, I mean, liqueurs are basically, I guess, some of them are a high profile sugar syrup, you know, with some sort of ethanol, let's say, you know, 20 or 25%, you know, and it might say, you know, with natural flavors on the back if you want to disclose that, but some will just say, you know, here's a triple sec, for example, you know, and that might be done with, you know, real with flavors opposed to being distilled, or here's a strawberry liqueur that might be done with strawberry flavorings opposed to, you know, actually distilled with various say strawberries, for example. So it really depends on the product that you're looking at. Look, if you're doing claims of, like, say you're doing low sugar claims, or you know, you've got some sort of caffeine or something like that in your product, which is naturally occurring, then you got to disclose that. If you going back to low sugar, you have to disclose a nutritional panel to show sort of what your sugar volumes are. You know,
consumers sometimes look out for those claims made with natural flavors. Yeah. It's a hot ticket to have on your bottle.
Yeah,
definitely.
So really depends.
Yeah. So do you have a peat substitute a peat flavor?
Good. Yep.
Yes, but it's not natural.
So smoked flavors are not natural. So look, the way that smoked flavors are constructed and the way that they're sort of put together, you know, if you got a whiskey and you want to add like a smoke element into it, again, you can put that flavor profile on there. It's not going to be it's not going to be natural. But I mean, again, you know, you've got a say a whiskey, like, you know, whiskey spirit, you don't have to disclose that it's got flavors in it. So that peat element or that smoke element will be coming directly from that flavor.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. The there is always a little bit of a question in the distilling industry about whether, like, they'll say on the label, no added colors, no coloring, those sorts of things. I guess people, and I haven't seen anyone that specifically says that there are colors added or that there are flavors added to it. Generally, it's no, there's not.
So if they don't have it on there, they must do it.
Must do.
Yeah.
I mean, half of crafty stuff is flavored.
Oh, yeah, we definitely have it in there. No.
Cannot defend here.
Flavored with love. Flavored with love.
I guess another way to sort of put it as well. I mean, all distillers, you know, everyone has their preference too. So, you know, they might want to add the element naturally going through that distillation process. There's some distillers that will say, hey, look, I've got this awesome product. It doesn't quite have the peatiness that I want. Can we sort of add a little bit of that in just to sort of help? You know, because it hasn't got quite there with the distilling process. Or, you know, if you're doing an RTD format again, you know, you might add a smoke element in there, which would just become under the ingredients listed in the flavors. So obviously not natural flavors, but we'll just say flavors. So it's it really depends, I guess, on the distiller.
I think there'd certainly be a lot more acceptance of adding of flavor and color to an RTD or a mixer or something more so than an actual distilled product that or even a potentially a gin, more so than a whiskey or a rum. Certainly there would be.
We have spiced rum, don't you? So.
Well, spiced rum, and all the time when I'm talking to people, that they go, oh, you do a podcast. Oh, you know what I love? I love the Fireball. Is there an Australian Fireball? Like, well, first of all, I can't talk to you anymore. But secondly, no, there isn't. So somebody could create an Australian Fireball alternative and corner the market using a cinnamon flavor.
100%.
There you go.
Yep. So most of the Fireball profile. So if you look at Fireball, I mean, I mean, we didn't do Fireball, but we can probably talk out loud here. But look, Fireball, I guess, you know, when they go through the process, there will be some, you know, I guess, component in there that they would be adding in, and it's basically, you know, creating this, I guess, cinnamon whiskey. So, you know, you can try do it with, you know, real cinnamon, but again, you're probably more going to have a lot more flavor forward sort of profiles, you know, coming from a flavor. You know, a lot of these big liqueurs, so you look at a lot of the, I guess, the likes of, you know, flavored sort of liqueurs, you know, a lot of them, which essentially what I guess, if you look at it from an aspect, I mean, Fireball, yes, it's a, you know, it's a cinnamon whiskey, but it's got a lot of sugar in it. And, you know, it's more of that other profile of a, you know, that liqueur sort of space. So then of course, you know, there's going to be added, you know, flavors in there. There's actually, I was saying before to Carla, we're talking, cause it's actually quite a big flavor profile, cinnamon. So it's actually quite a big and up and coming flavor, which a lot of people are using because of the Fireball trend. So there you go. So Hammo, so now that opens up your mind, flavor burns, correct. There you go. So look, again, you know, look, it definitely does. I mean, there's you know, there might be elements, you know, of depending on how they sort of put the caramel or the salt, there might be real salt, but yeah, there definitely will be flavors in a lot of those bourbons that are in market. You know, you look at honey bourbons and stuff like that. I mean, the legality, like trying to get honey anywhere in the world with all the I guess the allergens and everything else that's sort of involved in it all, and the restrictions of actually bringing real honey in, it does limit you. And what you can mention, do. So.
As Todd and Crafty can attest, the pure difficulty of fermenting and distilling honey.
It's exciting,
isn't it, Crafty? Sorry, say that again.
Distilling honey, making mead.
Yeah. Not the easiest thing in the world, that's for sure.
If
honey is a difficult substrate to work with.
Yeah. So, yes. Crafty, question for you. Knowing how difficult honey is to work with, and assuming that your honey spirit is a fantastic success, and you've got orders coming out the wazoo, but you just can't get the honey, would you consider experimenting with a
mead flavor?
With a honey flavoring to create a liqueur?
Oh, look,
not necessarily a whiskey, but a liqueur.
I think the key to it all is you can do what you want. It's transparency.
Mm.
As long as you're being transparent, yeah, the world's your oyster. And with flavor compounds, as you both said, it's just unlimited what you can do, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah. I'm curious about the going back a few steps to mouthfeel.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's certainly something that a lot of people or probably consumers maybe don't think about as much as distillers do. Distillers are always about how does it feel? Is it oily? Is it thick and rich and syrupy or whatever. You touched on it before. There's certain additives you can put in there that will impact the mouthfeel. Are they flavorings themselves, or are they purely just there for textural purpose?
I don't know what they would be classed as, but we use gum acacia. So especially when you're taking sugar out of a beverage, you lose the mouthfeel. So we add it back in with different things such as gum acacia and acids. So on the labeling, what would
so it be like? So you'd have different gums that you can add in, gum arabic, gum arabic, gum acacia, there's gal gum that you can add in, like there's all different types of xanthan gums, probably another one. So there's all different types of gums that you can sort of put into products. If you're creating like an RTD, say for example, and you've stripped out all the sugar and it's something like a soda, whiskey soda or something that you want a little bit of mouthfeel and like you can add some sort of gum in there. But yeah, it's just, I mean, gums are a list. So gum acacia will be listed as gum acacia. I don't know the
additive.
An additive. Yeah. I don't know the exact.
Don't know the code.
I don't know the code off the top of my head, but
you should.
Sugar's the main one. Sugar's the main one. You know, if you're sort of creating these real sort of sweet, I guess down the track of like, flavored rums, for example, is probably a good example. If you're sort of wanting to put sugars into that, sugars can create obviously quite a mouthfeel. But then obviously, everyone has their different distillation processes as well. That sort of, as you mentioned before, can create the mouthfeels and the taste. And is it smooth? Is it like sharp? Is it, something that you can sort of drink neat? Is it something that you sort of need to add with a mixer that's, because it's quite sharp? Or is it, it all depends, I guess, from the distilling process. I mean, everyone's different. Every distiller is different. Nobody is exactly the same in their craft, you know what I mean? And everyone has their opinions, everyone in the distilling community respects, and and everyone does things differently. So it all depends on really what it is that you're trying to achieve.
Going back to the cost implications of choosing from a synthetic versus a natural flavoring, and by extension then up to a premium flavoring. What's the definition of a premium flavor?
So premium flavors, we'll start at the top and we'll work our way down. Premium flavors, they'll be quite a complex build. So, you know, instead of having, you know, three elements in there or three building blocks in, say, like a sort of a general mainstream flavor, you might have 10 building blocks, or you might have 20 building blocks, or you might have
a volume. It's a volume.
Yeah, of course. You're going to get, obviously, you compare a premium flavor to sort of a mainstream flavor. If we compare wavy, probably is a good example. I mean, you can taste. It tastes like there's real blood orange and real mandarin that are squeezed into this. So these are what we call premium flavors. And they're real true to fruit. And that's generally what sort of premium sort of element will do.
So that price range would be quite high.
Yeah, the price range does jump a little bit. Don't get me wrong, there's some premium flavors that are sort of on par with sort of some of the mainstream flavors. And then obviously your natural flavors. So look, natural flavors, again, you can have some very expensive natural flavors because of just like the raw materials that are going into this different product, these various products. That can vary as well. So you can have, you know, there can be sort of the cheapest sort of profile, but you're still going to get a nice profile, or they can be a little bit more expensive and a little bit more complex. And then synthetic, but believe it or not, synthetic can be sometimes the same price as a premium flavor, or it can be the same price as a natural flavor, because the compounds that are used for the to obviously build those different types of flavors can be quite complex as well. So again, you know, you've got different levels of synthetic flavors. You might have a really basic synthetic flavor that, you know, might cost, you know, be very cheap, but then, you know, that you're going to get that profile of like, oh, this just tastes like a generic, you know, lemonade flavor, you know what I mean? Whereas, you know, you can go synthetic flavor and have like a premium synthetic lemonade. You know, it's different variations. I mean, and it all comes down to volume as well. I mean, sort of how big you're sort of ordering to.
There's banana flavoring and there's banana flavor.
What's that, sorry?
There's banana flavoring and there's banana flavoring.
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct.
And if a customer comes to us with a brief, we would always like work out what's their cost and use, what's their ideal sale price. And then we would work backward to make sure that when we're formulating or supplying them flavor samples, that's within their range of purchasing.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. But you know, so I've just cracked everyone as well. You probably heard the mango, which does.
You're slow. You must be talking too much or something.
What do you think of the mango?
Tastes like mango. That's
the watermelon. Tastes like watermelon.
The strawberry. Like strawberry. You must drink a lot of this stuff.
Yeah,
all the time. Do believe it or not, your palate is the most freshest at 9 a.m. in the morning. So if we've got a pretty big tasting session going, there's no coffee, there's no chewing gum, there's no anything. So if somebody smokes cigarettes, you can't have a cigarette before a tasting. No vaping, no nothing. So that's when your palate is the freshest in the morning.
What's the time, the optimal time frame between brushing your teeth in the morning and doing your first tasting? Is there an optimal time?
We tell people not to brush their teeth. No, I'm kidding. you sort of go through, and I mean, you can cleanse your palate as well, obviously, of water.
Crackers.
Crackers is another big one too. So if you're tasting, you know, sometimes we taste 10, you know, there might be 10 SKUs and might be three variants of each. So there might be 30 SKUs that we're tasting. Again, you know, we obviously don't sit there and drink a whole bottle. It might be 5, 10, 20, 30 mils, depends on the product. You got a spittoon as well. I mean, some people like to go through the process and actually enjoy the tasting experience, but you'll find that they'll be racing off to the bakery at lunchtime for a pie, which is it's all good. But again, you know, it's it's funny, like everyone's palates. I mean, what you taste, I mean, everyone's palates are different, so you're not wrong on what you're tasting. And I think that's a really important thing that you know, people need to understand. You know, you might say, oh, this doesn't taste like watermelon, but we might think it tastes like watermelon, but they don't think it tastes like watermelon. So then again, they're not wrong. You know, we might be, you know, nobody's wrong, but it's just the way that their palate, I guess, and their taste buds sort of react to those various flavors.
And how you perceive what a flavor should taste like.
Correct.
And how does the matrix know?
These that taste like the fruit without the sugar component or the sweetness.
Yeah, so, definitely. Yeah.
So it's quite interesting.
Mm. And certainly on the nose as well. Mm. You do. It is straight up mango.
Yeah,
that's.
It should be like a juicy kind of juicy.
It's, yeah, of it's almost like a mango smoothie. Mm-hmm. You've just raised up a mango and poured it in the can.
That's it. You can also have a bit of fun when you're doing blind tastings as well, because you can tell someone it tastes like banana, but then it might be passion fruit, and you can tell
it's actually so somebody
else this tastes like pineapple, but it's actually a passion fruit, or you can say this banana is passion fruit, but it's actually really banana. So you can really throw a tasting as well. So generally when we always suggest as well, when you're doing tastings as a, you know, with a tasting panel, write down what you're tasting. And don't discuss it during the tasting, because again, everyone's palates are different. So someone might say, "Oh, this tastes more banana," than it does passion fruit, and then everyone will then start tasting banana.
When you're doing tastings, you sort of say, "Well, you'll be able to taste chocolate in this," and then all of a sudden, everyone can taste chocolate.
It's funny. It's amazing how many people drink it with their eyes as well.
Yeah,
definitely. And I mean, look, in a can, you can't see the color. You can't.
I assume it's clear, but it might not.
I would assume it is.
It really throws you. So you can do, say, you know, you can make something bright green, but it might be, a strawberry or something like that. And people will sort of taste it. It's like, this doesn't taste like strawberry. But then you put the same flavor profile in a clear product and they'll be like, "Oh, that's a strawberry." Well, it's exactly the same as what they tasted, but you know, the perception is so different. It's actually quite amazing. Everyone's felt. There you go.
So there's the mango, crystal clear, lovely light carbonation. There you go. In my dirty glass. Well, it's fascinating. It opens up a whole a whole range of ideas and possibilities for both extending a product range and complementing a product range as well, whether it be creating a liqueur, creating some flavored spirits like your flavored rums and flavored bourbons and that sort of thing. Through the RTDs or to the mixers, it's very broad, and a lot more broad than I had anticipated or even thought about before. I'd never really thought about flavorings.
It's a whole new world.
It's a whole new world.
It is. And the way you're talking about flavorings, they do color as well.
Well, yeah, that's it. I haven't even gotten into the colors. And obviously with the brewing side of things, you've got enzymes and auxiliaries. What the fuck is an auxiliary?
So auxiliaries sort of helps with the process. So it just makes it more, more streamlined, adding these different processes in place. And then you've got, you know, the likes of different enzymes, which help with, you know, better downstream processing, better yields. If you're processing fruits, it's
better
heads. If you want low carb, no carb, if you want clear, if you want, as Carla said, more head, if you want, there's just so many different things that you can do with enzymes. It's actually amazing. And you know, we've got a pretty big range. We can custom make enzymes to do anything. Like, we've obviously got our mainstream ones, which we supply, you know, throughout the brewing industry. And you know, for processing, you know, various different beers and different variations of beer and sort of what it is that they want to do. But there's, you know, there's a couple of things. I mean, kettle finings. I mean, we've got a product called Copper Flock, which is a carrageenan. So that's probably one of the most commonly used products, which basically it really enhances your mash. So you're going through that. You're going through the process of, I guess, you know, just giving you bigger and better and quicker responses.
It just helps.
Yeah, it just helps the process.
So, you know, sorry, what was that? what was that product called? Copper Flock.
So that's our brand name for
Copper Flock. Copper Flock granules. So I'm not even going to try and pronounce that. Carrageenan.
Carrageenan.
Where are you looking?
What up here on the website? Wort finding agent for clarifying beer and other alcoholic beverages. That's under the kettle finings under the brewing enzymes and auxiliaries. So you add that during your mashing process in order to increase yield, increase
clarity.
Explain that to me again, what that one's doing.
Look, so it basically, like, with your kettle finings, it's an interesting one. It really helps optimize your mash and your work process. So you're getting breaking, like, with your carrageenan, if you sort of your carrageenans and stuff, it sort of really helps with that process. And then obviously from there, you've got your downstream process. So you might use a beta glucanase or a xylanase, and then you've got your as Carl was mentioning before, like your MagiSol, which is essentially a silica sol, so that helps clarify products. Your yeast nutrients
to drop all the proteins and all the solids down to the bottom, so then your wort that comes off is a lot more refined product.
So bigger yields and better downstream process, that's the biggest thing when you're coming into brewing, especially craft brewing. Clarity, if you want to clarify beer, if you're doing a no carb beer, you look at like a glucoamylase, so that helps break down all the carbohydrates and I guess the sugars, you're creating these products which are essentially you can claim no carbs when it goes through the process. So you look at probably seltzers is probably a good example. When you're doing like a fermented base where probably a rice base is probably the most commonly use seltzer base, you're using different various enzymes to help obviously get that to a neutral profile. You're going through the carbon filter process to strip out all the flavoring and everything else, and you basically get it down to almost like it's water,
really clean
neutral base, which essentially is what this is on. So this is on a brewed fermented base, which is it's clean.
That's a rice base.
That's a fermented. I believe they ferment rice. That we don't actually ferment. Like we don't do the fermentation. Yep. So that's obviously who they work with in the brewing industry. So they've obviously got various people that they work with to create these products, but that's a lot of it's their IP. But
the word rice just piques my interest because our previous two episodes have been on rice whiskey. So we had Nick Hope from Dusty Barrel, who is Australia's only rice whiskey distiller, or first rice whiskey distiller. And then we also spoke with Grant Talon, a Chinese rice whiskey producer. So rice is on my mind at the moment. Piques my interest. Another use for rice. And the fact that Nick is always talking about the difficulty in using rice because it is he doesn't use enzymes, but he uses a fungus among us of some form to do the sushi rice. Curious. Interesting. Very interesting.
So we've got in our team, we've got a couple of enzyme specialists. So they will go through and understand sort of the process and what it is that you're trying to achieve. And we can actually we can look at that process and be like, right, well, say you're processing fruit, you want to get a bigger yield from your fruit processing. So we can actually adapt and create an enzyme that is used, and we can pinpoint the optimum point in the processing, matrix that will enhance that yield. So when that product's added in, so we can go through that whole process from start to finish. We just need to understand, what it is that you wanted to achieve, and then we can go through of how we can achieve it, and then what enzymes will work best for that, and how we can essentially create some sort of compound enzyme as well that can be like, all right, we'll use this at this point, and this is the, we'll do the testing in our laboratory, and actually, there'll be true results showing obviously the data through the process of making that compound. So it's quite impressive what we can do.
Wow. So, sorry, just to clarify that in my mind.
Sure.
So if you wanted to use a specific fruit in your brew, in your mash, whatever it may be, that particular fruit doesn't have a huge the ability of that to ferment, or for sugars to be extracted from it, can be a little difficult. You can create an enzyme potentially that can assist in
breaking down that product
and breaking that down and making it into a fermentable.
Correct.
Right.
Yep. So there's, as I said, it's various applications. So if you're processing cider, there'll be various applications for, breaking down pear and apple. If you're, say you're making a juice, like you're processing juice concentrates, or, you've got a fresh cold pressed juice, I guess, as an example, or some sort of other process.
Would an enzyme have been really handy in fermenting honey?
Well, that's what I was actually going to mention. We had a mead, I think it was Mead Australia or someone from the Mead Association, get in touch. This was probably like 2015, 2016. To help with his process of mead, and I actually gave him a few enzymes. So don't ask me what enzyme it was right now, but I can get it later on to let you know what it was in case it might help you with your processing. So, but in terms of that, we've had an inquiry last year for potato vodka. So we provided an enzyme to help break down the potato starch to create a potato vodka. So there's heaps of different ways that enzymes can be used in novel ways and.
If anyone out there that's obviously listening and they've got a they've sort of got a process that they're trying to achieve or they're trying to process a product that's not quite working for them, as I said, reach out to us and we can go through the process and understand a little bit more of what it is that you're wanting to achieve, and we can potentially have a solution for you as well.
That is fascinating, and really does open up the mind to the possibilities, and hopefully as a result of this, we'll have some people reach out to you to find out more and see how you can help. Look, I think that's as good a place as any to say thank you very much for joining us and giving us an overview and a bit of a deep dive into flavors and enzymes that we only just touched on at the end and all the other things that you can assist with. People can jump on to Zymus, ZYMUS.net, Zymus.net. You're based just down here in Sydney, in Marrickville.
Yeah.
So what's the best way for people to get in touch? Just jump on the website.
Yeah, you just hop on the website and go to the contact us page and just fill that out, and it comes directly to me, and then we can work it out from there. So.
Brilliant. Bring it. I can see a lot of interesting things. Mm. Oh, here we go. Whiskey that tastes like space food sticks.
I think we need to get
with us, Haymo.
Yeah, Haymo. I think there's some flavors, mate, that we can send you that we could have a play around with and sort of showcase some various flavors that you're after, mate. Send you some small samples and give you some guided dose rates, and we could certainly find some space stick flavors. 100%. It's definitely. I promise you now, it is a thing.
That is amazing, and definitely we echo. Hamo's sentiments there. Fascinating discussion. Thank you very much. And so please, everyone, jump on to Zymus.net have a chat with Cam and Carla and see what opportunities there are. Mm. And I'm going to be thinking about this all night now. So, Thank you. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you, everyone. As always, if you can, please hit that like and subscribe button. We'll, you know, we'll get to that 1,000 subscribers eventually.
That's right.
We're not in any rush.
Apparently, we're not in any rush anyway.
We say we're not in a rush because what are we going to do?
It's not going to make it happen any quicker.
We're still lining up our next guest for 2 weeks. Crafty will be back by then.
Yep, definitely.
Yep, he'll be back by then. Cool. So, yeah, stay on the – jump on the socials and, we'll put out the event for our next shit session. Cam and Carla, thank you so much. Thank you again. Thank you to the Waves team.
Really enjoyed your drink.
Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm going to look forward to cracking into the other ones.
Yes.
Over the weekend. Thank you for joining us. Thank you all for listening, watching, like, and subscribe, and we will catch you all
in 2 weeks.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.